Mr. Portsline, how are you doing?
Doing very well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I guess, have you heard, what is the Johansson, like, what is Johansson looking for in a contract? Why are they at such a stalemate right now?
He's looking for, the best we can tell, roughly 6.5 a year per year on a two-year deal. So $13 million over 2 years.
So he's really not looking for a bridge contract, is he?
He's looking for a golden bridge. Yes. You know what I think is at the core of this, not from the agent to team perspective, but from the other way, I think these are all, they're all waiting for one to bust here and go and set the standard. Nobody wants to be the team that sort of is the first team that gets the first year out of entry level, first year into a bridge contract. That they don't want to get that number out of whack. If that makes sense, and unless the Blue Jackets hold fast, they're going to be that team because they certainly can't give them 6.5 a year.
No, give like one good season is what he's had, right?
That's right.
Ultimately, do you think they settle on a 1 year deal at probably like $3 million?
I think that's a possibility. I mean, the agent, the Johansson camp right now would say that $3 million is not going to happen. I think a 1 year deal is a possibility, but they're both set on two, which keeps him and he's still an RFA at the end of 2 years. So I think that's the greater likelihood, but there could be a change to that to 1 year just to get it done, get him into camp on time.
And he doesn't really have any negotiating powers. Like I saw Bob McKenzie tweet that Kemper's maybe looking at KHL options with an out for the NHL. You know, Johansson, you can only hold out, I think, until November 1st at the latest now under the new CBA, Aaron. So, you know, ultimate, and that doesn't benefit him then because if he gets a short-term deal and he holds out, then he misses the first part of the season. He plays catch-up. He doesn't have a good year anyway, and he's right back where he started next year.
Yeah, well, in that scenario, whatever money he makes is prorated, right?
Yeah.
So you take out what, you know, the games that he's missed, the days that he's missed already. And that's part of the Blue Jackets' point here, is this is the last time in the negotiations between the Blue Jackets and Johansson. This is the last time that the club is going to have the hammer. And the next one, if he signs a two-year deal, the next one he's going to have arbitration rights. After that, he'll become a UFA, and the hammer is all his. But these teams are in a situation where they'll pay the player and they'll pay him a level that they think is fair based on other players, but they're not going to give the player the money and the hammer. This is the only time they wield it entirely, so they'd better get full use of it now.
Exactly, and I've said that all along. This isn't a personal thing. This is the time where it's business, and at some point the players and their agents have to realize they can't always have the power in negotiations.
Right, and it does, I mean, really, the player like Johansson, he's got the hammer, two hammers, really. One of them, of course, depends on another NHL franchise to negotiate with him and sign him to an offer sheet. But that hasn't happened yet. So it appears as though that's not going to happen unless something comes together pretty quickly here with another team. The other one is his services. And the kid's not going to be in camp on time. I have a hard time believing that he's going to be in training camp on time if they're $3 million apart per year on a two-year contract. It must be noted, too, that his agent, Kurt Overhart, he feels he's doing his job. That's fine. He's had a lot of players hold out through the years. I think in the last 5 or 6 years, more of the quote-unquote holdout players are Overhart clients than anybody else. So, you know, this is not a path that he is unfamiliar with. It's certainly not one that he's not willing to go down, and there are some people who think that that's part of the negotiation for him, is that training camp's not a big deal, and it drives the team into decisions they'd rather not make.
Aaron Portsline joins us from the Columbus Dispatch. There's no backup plan if they don't sign Ryan Johansson. He's clearly their number one center, so I'm guessing they're pretty confident eventually they'll get the contract done.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, they don't feel like the kid's really got any options, so you know, at some point he's going to be ready to pick up the pen and sign the contract. So, you know, what are you waiting for, kid? If he doesn't sign, they feel like they're competitive. They're not the club that they want to be. But, you know, they can still – Boone Jenner would go back to center, I would imagine, in that scenario. And down the middle, you still have Dubinsky and Nisimov Jenner, Letestu, they are fairly deep at center. They're more able to handle it now than they've ever been. But, yeah, you take 33 goals out of their lineup, clearly their best offensive player, they're going to miss him.
Oh, for sure. I think they would miss him. Looking at the Blue Jackets overall, though, and let's, you know, I still feel they'll get a contract done at some point. We've seen these negotiations go down to the wire. The NHL, that's how they work in a lot of cases. It's down to the wire negotiations. They get him back. How much better are the Blue Jackets now than they were at the end of last season?
I think they're better. If I think the Hartnell trade makes them better. They acquired Scott Hartnell for R.J. Umberger. I think you've got a young team, and you can, you know, I'm talking to somebody from Edmonton who's seen this up close and personal. You can bank on young players just simply getting better because they're young. It doesn't always happen that way, but it can happen that way. And this was the youngest team in the league last year, by far the youngest team that made the playoffs. And, you know, Boone Jenner, you assume, is going to get better. They've got a lot of young players that are right on the cusp of being really special players. Johansson had a really good year last year. Matt Calvert is a young player that's got a lot of ability. And don't forget, 3 first-round draft picks last year. So this next wave of talent is coming. And Alexander Wenberg, Kirby Reichel, they're in a pretty good spot. They also think Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be a better goaltender than he was last year. Not a great season for him. Good, not great. There's a lot of optimism here.
Well, there definitely looks like it. You mentioned that you feel Hartner's a big upgrade over Umberger. In what fashion do you feel? Because if you look at their stats, you know, obviously Hartnell's been a better goal scorer. Neither one of them's fleet of foot. What is Hartnell going to bring more than Umberger?
Well, they feel like Hartnell is a bona fide top six player. They didn't feel that about Umberger anymore at any point last year, and they didn't feel like he was a top 12 player at the end of the season, a healthy scratch a few times. Not a Todd Richards-type player. Scott Hartnell, I don't think there's ever been any question about his battle level. And you know, he's a different kind of player. The numbers are the same. I feel like, and this may not be fair, but I feel like a lot of people within the Blue Jackets felt like Umberger's line mates were holding him up, whereas Hartnell has played with Claude Giroux, has played with some high-end players in Philadelphia, and maybe at this stage of his career is still able to do that, maybe at a level that Umberger's no longer able to do.
Where do you see their back end? Because I know a lot of analytics guys aren't fans of Jack Johnson.
You're being very kind.
Where, you know, is Johnson as bad as some of them think, Aaron? How is he perceived inside the organization?
Yeah, he's not, and this is one of those things, and I'm not an analytics hater. I'm fine with the analytics. Any information that you can generate in any way about this game that we all love is great. I'm not that guy. But that's a good example right there, Jack Johnson, of where I think that's proof that analytics still has a ways to go, that those numbers aren't exactly always a full example of the player. I'm not saying Jack Johnson is a top-tier defenseman in the NHL. He's not. I don't know if on a really good team, if he's a top-pairing defenseman. I don't think he is. But I know that he's not one of the worst defensemen in the league. I know that he's not the worst defenseman on the Blue Jackets. His game does not favor well in Corsi. That is for certain. But the guy... You know, the other thing, too, is Jack still, and this is maddening for some within the organization, he still is prone to these very high waves of performance where he wasn't very good until early January, and it coincided with him getting pissed off that he was left off the USA Olympic hockey team. So maybe they should keep him pissed off somehow, some way. He played much better from January on, and he was an absolute monster in the playoffs, a really, really good, hard to play against competitive player against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, it was interesting talking about the competitive against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They gave the Pens everything they could handle. right, in that series. And ultimately, maybe, you know, it's a little bit more skill at the top end on the Pittsburgh side. I really like the makeup of Columbus. And I look at the East, and it's really kind of wide open in my eyes. Like, Columbus is a team, Aaron, that if they get Johansson and he's ready to go to training camp and start the season, like, they could be a top three or four team in the East.
Yeah, as strange as that is to hear, and it's hard for people to get their arms around, I believe you. I think one thing that has really benefited them is that they have been taught and they have learned to survive in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
And when you take the West to the East, I think that is a much more successful model for a club than a club going from East to West. I think that's really benefited them. They flat out overwhelmed teams last year. You know, when you're playing the St. Louis Blues, the Blackhawks, the Predators in your division over and over and over again, that's murder. And you know, they go to the East, and it just seems it's a lighter style. It's not as the defensemen turn around with the puck and they don't get blasted every time. It's a totally different reality in the East than it is in the West. And what you said about the playoffs, I think, is partly true. But I really think from the Blue Jackets' perspective, the reason they lost that series, it was less about skill and more about the fact that Pittsburgh has this aura about them. I don't know that they have it anymore, but Columbus didn't quite have the confidence and the belief that they should have been there playing with the Penguins. Because if you look back on that series now, just hanging with that Pittsburgh Penguins team doesn't seem nearly as impressive as it did at the time. That is a highly flawed franchise, which is why they made so many changes in the offseason.
One last one for you. Who's going to be the third pairing defenders in Columbus this year, and what should Oiler fans expect from Nikita Nikitin?
Well, the third pair is probably going to be Dalton Prout and David Savard, with Tim Erickson in a battle with one of those guys for regular time on the third pair. Whoever doesn't make it will be the seventh defenseman. I think Erickson's that guy on paper right now. Nikita Nikitin, big guy, has a surprising shot. He doesn't use it a lot. He's got a really good one-timer that about probably every 12 or 15 games will make you sort of do a double take and wonder if that was really Nikita Nikitin. I think he's going to be fine. The money is worrying. That's a big ticket for a player like that, but I don't mind the term. I think if he's surrounded and paired with the right guy, I think you could be pleasantly surprised by him.
Okay. When you say right guy, what guy does he need on the right side? Like a pure defensive stay-at-home guy? What does he need? A puck mover? What does he need to be paired with?
I think he needs a puck mover and a puck possessor,
okay,
a person who's comfortable carrying the puck. He's a big guy who doesn't always play big, but I'm telling you, he will let one go, a one-timer, and you'll go, whoa. Seriously? And you wonder where that is, because it is a really good, low, heavy, hard shot. He's an interesting player. There's a lot there to like. There's some stuff. He has to keep the gap right. Like if he doesn't keep the correct gap coming through the neutral zone, it's really hard for him to catch up. But he's a player that brings a lot of attributes to the table.
Aaron, always good to catch up with you. Enjoy the rookie camp getting going, and then into the regular season. Hopefully, up from a Columbus fan perspective, they get the contract signed before training camp starts, because I don't think they want Johansson playing catch-up.
No, they'd like him to be there on the day that it starts. Thanks for your time, Jason.